Hello, it's great to have you with me. I'm Kim Clyden, former ABC radio presenter and children's book author, creating a community of people who care about children. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent, and empowered children? And they say it takes a village. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story.
Today's guest is someone who has been busting myths about health, wellness, and body image for more than three decades. Fiona Tuck is a British-Australian nutritionist, skincare expert, yoga, and meditation instructor. With over 30 years in the professional skincare and wellness industry, Fiona takes a forensic approach to nutrition, decoding fads, trends, and marketing hype to uncover the science behind what truly supports our health. But her passion for well-being came from a deeply personal place. Growing up in the 80s, an era defined by aerobics, dieting, and glossy magazine perfection, Fiona experienced the darker side of that culture, battling both anorexia and bulimia as a teenager. Her recovery became the foundation for a life dedicated to helping others build healthier, more balanced relationships with food, body, and mind. Hello, Fiona. It seems like a decade since we first connected. How do you think your childhood experience shaped you?
Really interesting question. So I grew up in the UK. I grew up in a tiny little village called Stock. Not much in the village apart from four pubs and a little newsagents. Very pretty little country village, like you would see on television in a murder mystery show. I would say it was a very normal family. My mother was a stay-at-home mom. I had a sister that was 2 years older. And my father had his own business and was always working. Okay, it was quite remote where we lived, and spent a lot of time at home because where we went to school, that was quite a drive. So my mother would drive us to school and pick us up. So we weren't on a housing estate or anything like that where there were local kids to play with. So a lot of the time, I would say we were on our own a lot of the time. But interestingly, it was actually quite a lonely childhood. And looking back now, I realize it was a very unusual childhood because my father is quite an interesting character and was pretty emotionally abusive to particularly me, but also my mother. I think you would classify him as a malignant narcissist. So there was a lot of emotional abuse, and that definitely influenced my, I would say, self-esteem, the way I grew up, the way I interacted with people, but also I think probably what I got interested in, and I threw a lot of my time into food.
That interests me because emotions can drive eating behaviours, as we all know. And I've seen it in myself, my children, whenever they had an emotional issue, it was tied to eating. So how did this affect you?
Well, I think as a child, my mum was a pacifier. She sort of wanted to sort of smooth everything over and keep everything stable. So her way of pacifying was with food. She was a feeder. So in a way, we would be giving food to shut up, just to keep quiet and have some food. And so I learned very quickly that food was a comfort. So I was a comfort eater as a child. And I was a chubby child and overweight, probably from around the age of 6 to 10 or 12. And then as a teenager, that's when you start becoming very aware of body shape changing. And I was a teenager in the 80s, and that was very much, the aerobics, Jane Fonda. We had in the UK Rosemary Connolly, which was all about the low-fat diet, and the dieting culture was huge. My mother was also very much always on and off a diet. She wouldn't eat in the day. She was cigarettes and smoking, would skip lunch. And so I learned that probably eating three meals a day wasn't healthy. I would get fat. And we were very much caught up in this diet culture. which very quickly led, as you can imagine, also with a very emotionally toxic household, my only way of control, I thought and didn't realize at the time, was with food. And that led then to eating disorders. So that went from bulimia to quite extreme anorexia as well, which carried on until my adult life. And at one point I was actually even hospitalized with it. And that is really what led me to study nutrition.
I often encounter people on this podcast who have had a life experience and they evolve through it and then want to help others. So when did you realize not only did you want to study nutrition, but you wanted to share that healthy lifestyle message with others?
It's interesting because even as a child, I was always really interested in health and beauty because my background is skincare as well. So I always loved that, you know, health and beauty. And I was reading all the books, even as a child, you know, those sort of beauty books and wellness books. And I loved them. I had all of them. So I was self-educating a lot. And then as a teenager, then, of course, was reading up as much as I could about, you know, the diet culture and the calories and how to lose weight, and became very calorie focused and calorie counting, which at the time is all consuming and is not healthy at all. Eventually, when I went on to learn nutrition, which was after I had studied skincare and other things, but learning nutrition for me, one was for my own health and to help me, but it was also to help people with skincare conditions. I felt that was something that wasn't looked at. It was all about topical beauty, but we didn't look at the internals and how we can address that with diet, which plays a huge role in my opinion. So for me, it was that final missing puzzle. Not only would studying nutrition help me, it would help other people, not only just from a skin benefit, but also from a diet culture. And that was for me, I see so many women caught up in can't eat carbs, I can't eat that, that's bad, mustn't have dairy, mustn't have the carbs, or I'll have that, but the low sugar version. And I'm all about having low sugar, don't get me wrong, but calorie counting and obsessing about food. And I would go so far as to say, Kim, there's very few women I come across that aren't in some way a little bit caught up in diet and how it makes them look. And I think most people are caught up in what they eat as to how it's going to make them look, not as to how it's going to make them feel. And I'm very much now someone that can pretty much eat whatever I like. Obviously, I'm very focused on healthy eating. But the years I wasted obsessing about, I can't have the pasta and I can't, you know, that's too high a calories. And when you realize you can have a little bit of everything, and if you really focus on all the good stuff and the plant-based foods and getting in all the fiber and the fruits and the vegetables and the legumes, you can pretty much eat everything. And I honestly feel so free. And it's really the first time in my life, in my late 40s, 50s, I've never had to worry about weight. I've always had a weight issue and I don't have a weight issue at all. And it's so simple and so many women don't realize it, and men, of course, as well. But healthy eating is so easy and we complicate it. We complicate it so much and then get caught up in weight issues and diet culture. And that's where I'd really like to help people.
I've been a yo-yo type of, you know, nutritionally unbalanced person most of my life. And it was because my body shape didn't match the Elle Macphersons of the 80s, as you mentioned earlier. And it didn't look like, it was sporty and it was muscular. And I had quite big thighs from my gymnastics and all of the sports I'd done. And so you learn to be ashamed of your body. Yeah. And then you do whatever you can to try and change it. You mentioned the 80s and the fad diets. How are we supposed to approach this for our children today when social media is rife with influences and a new type of diet or exercise regime daily on platforms like TikTok and Instagram?
This is where it's frightening because people are so influenced by online and social media, and even some professionals, to be honest with you, you know, there is this culture of, you know, almost a mob mentality that if everybody else is doing it, even if it's a myth, it becomes real. And then people get paranoid about it. For dairy, for instance, it's almost trendy not to have dairy, right? And I often hear people say, oh, I can't have dairy. And then I do wonder, is it really an issue for you? Or is it because you've been reading online that it can cause bloating? And for some people, it can cause bloating, but how much are you having? And there's lactose-free alternatives now. And what else are you eating in your diet? So I do think people are very influenced online. You know, it becomes very trendy to be gluten-free or dairy-free. And for some people, it is a real issue. But quite often, for a lot of people, it might not be. They're just following what everybody else is doing. And we know, you know, that when we cut out complete food groups for absolutely no reason, unless there is a real medical reason to do so, it can impact our health in a negative way. And what we're replacing it with can also be problematic. So I think it's very much about trying to keep it simple. Healthy eating really is simple, and it's not about making it all or nothing. And I think this is the main issue that we have. As humans, we tend to look at a study, for instance, and say, well, if that causes that, then we have to completely cut it out. But we don't look about how much of it do you have to have for it to be problematic. And what I mean by that is, you know, the poison is in the dose, right? So a little bit of something may not be an issue, but it may be an issue if that's all you have. And to give you an example for that, gluten. If you're celiac, completely different, you cannot have gluten. But there were some studies saying gluten can be problematic for the gut. If you have highly refined processed food that's all gluten and you don't offset that with other foods such as prebiotics and polyphenols, which are plant compounds in fruits and vegetables, you may have an issue. But if you are having a little bit of gluten, like say in a Mediterranean diet, with all the fruits and the vegetables and the prebiotics and the polyphenols, which do offset any potential negative effect that the gluten may have, it's not an issue. So we sometimes take things out of context and we have to look at the whole picture. What you have in your diet as a whole rather than focus on one individual thing, which is what I think we tend to do as humans. And I think that's where we get it wrong. So we can have a little bit of everything, providing the whole of the diet is healthy, if you see what I mean.
Children actually model a lot of their behaviours between 0 and 5 on what they see in their homes. How can we make sure that what we're doing is modelling the right thing for our children? And I know you just discussed a little bit of everything. So is it that old adage, you know, everything in moderation?
It is everything in moderation. I think that it's interesting when we look at sort of latest studies. I think I've got something here where, you know, with the Australian Bureau of Statistics, sort of the latest study is saying that only 4.3% of children met the recommendations for fruit and vegetable intake. And, you know, how many women do we meet, and men as well, but with from a client perspective, my clients mainly were women, but, you know, so many don't eat fruit because they're worried about sugar intake. Now, if the only sugar you get is from fruit, then that's fine to eat fruit because you're also getting the fiber and all the phytonutrients from fruit. Fruit will have a much more beneficial effect on our bodies than getting vitamin C from a synthetic supplement, because that supplement doesn't have all the fibers and the phytonutrients that we need for certain biochemical reactions within the body. So if you see a parent not eating fruit and vegetables, the child isn't, or maybe you don't have a lot of that in the household, then the child just isn't going to be eating those foods. So we do have to be careful. And I know, I think it was about 10 years ago when that I Quit Sugar thing was really huge. And so many parents were really limiting fruit consumption with their children. And I think around that time, we actually started to see scurvy. Can you believe that in this day and age? And scurvy is a vitamin C deficiency because the children just weren't meeting that intake. So I think, first of all, it does come with the parents. Even if the parents don't like certain foods, that's not to be passed on to the children, you know, and it's trying to get that diversity of foods in the diet for children, which is so important because not only is it going to increase their exposure to really important nutrients, it's also going to help to support the gut microbiome. And we know that a healthy gut microbiome is the best predictor for health and wellness and disease prevention.
I can see we've got a lot more chatting to do, Fiona, but one thing I wanted to cover off on now that we're down this road is the fact that we've seen such a rise in autism and ADHD. Undiagnosed or diagnosed, with this rise in autism and ADHD in our society, introducing foods can be quite difficult. How would you advise people go about trying to expose their children to a wide variety of food?
One of the things when I was a nutritional medicine practitioner, I used to attract the clients that had exhausted all avenues. You know, they'd been to the naturopaths, they'd been told to take this food out, this food out, this food out, this food out, and they were left with this very small list of foods they could eat, and they were absolutely paranoid about what they were eating because they were worried they were going to flare the symptoms up. I can't tell you how many clients like that I would see. And the first thing I would do would be to slowly reintroduce foods. And it's the same that goes for children, because there was a study that was done, I think it was back in 2018. It was the American Gut Project study. This is a really huge finding. It was a collaboration of researchers from the US, from the UK, and from Australia. And basically what it found was that we need at least 30 different plant foods a week to support a healthy gut microbiome. Now, the study showed that the participants who had the widest variety of plant foods in the diet had a more diverse gut microbiome. It also showed that, and they did the studies and they looked through all their poop samples and looked at the bacteria, you know, the good bacteria. And the more variety of plants that these people ate, the better good bacteria they had, which is basically, we want the good bacteria to fight off the bad bacteria that can basically, if that gets out of hand, can cause disease. And it also reduced certain other sort of toxic compounds because the gut microbiome was healthy. So we know that we need this wide variety of plant foods. And that means a wide variety of fruits and vegetables, you know, different coloured fruits and vegetables. But it also includes things like whole grains. It includes things like legumes, so your beans and your pulses, and also things like herbs and spices. So really it's about, with children, trying to introduce them at a very early age to a variety of different foods. Don't just keep to the same foods. You know, I've seen so many people just eating rice crackers and, you know, a couple of different food types. We want to get as much diversity in the diet because that's going to help with a healthy gut microbiome. And it might be that, you know, for the breakfast cereal, you're adding in, you know, some different types of berries. It might be that we're having a lot of different vegetables chopped up or blended up into the meal so that the children can't even see them. I mean, that's not my ideal preference because we want children to love vegetables. You know, if you say, oh, yum, I love vegetables, then usually the children will too. But some children are picky eaters. And of course, sometimes you do have to disguise it and hide it. And you can make ice cream out of frozen banana and fresh fruit and some milk. And it's delicious. So there's a lot of different ways that we can get these plant foods in. And you can even make cakes and get courgette into the cake or carrot into the cake. You know, there's a lot of things that we can do to sort of get that diversity in there. And I would say one of the biggest life changes for me and for my clients, and particularly people that, you know, are yo-yo dieters or children that are picky eaters, is to get that diversity in the diet. And rather than count calories, actually count the different types of foods that they're getting in their diet. Count the different vegetables. You know, how many different plant foods are on your plate, and start to count that. And you can very, very easily get to those 30 plant foods. Even adding nuts, you know, if you sprinkle some nuts into a salad or into some porridge, nuts and seeds, that can also make the world of difference because you're getting the plant foods in with your nuts and seeds as well.
I think there's so much for us to understand about nutrition, and it's something we weren't taught in depth at school. This definitely needs to be revisited. Fiona Tuck, thank you so much for your suggestions today. I can already see a star chart with 30 different foods a week.
That will really change your life if that's all you change, because the more plant foods you get into the diet, the less room you have for all the ultra processed foods, and it will make a world of difference.
Thank you so much. I look forward to chatting with you again soon.
Thanks, Kim.
Nutritionist, skincare expert, yoga and meditation instructor, Fiona Tuck, whose story reminds us that the way we talk about food, body and health shapes the way our children see themselves. Her message is refreshingly simple. Focus on variety, not calories. Aim for 30 different plant-based foods a week. And remember that moderation is key to long-term well-being. You'll find Fiona's book, The Forensic Nutritionist, and links to her work in the show notes. If today's conversation inspires you to explore food as fuel for connection and self-worth, start small. Share a meal, cook with your children, and talk about what nourishes you, body and soul. Because what we teach our children about health is never just about food. It's about kindness, balance, and belonging. If you'd like to start a conversation with your children about dietary choices, you'll find books for 2 to 8-year-olds about growing veggies in Grandpa's garden and how humans have evolved to eat a variety of food, like Megan the vegan, who'll be joined by Colin the carnivore and Petra the pescatarian, educating children that everyone is different and has the right to have their choice respected. Visit kimclyden.com to learn more. That's kimclyden.com. Thanks for joining me. Until next time, be the change you want to see in the world.